Thank you for your introduction with Art Plus and the House of World Cultures. We discussed the events and wanted to respond to those. I'm delighted that we can meet here today. I want to look differently at the context in which the Bauhaus was set up. I'm not an expert in this, though. I looked at Regina Wranger's work on this and Franziska Lampe's work. They've already addressed this topic. And I'm doing this for a very particular reason. I'll explain to you in a moment what that is. So I'm not going to introduce Bauhaus Imaginista, which is starting on the 14th of March. I invite you all to come along to that, by the way. On the 16th of March, we'll have an event, The Political Imaginista, and a new school event looking at the pedagogical events. That'll be in May. So do come along to those. You're warmly welcome. With the 100-year centenary of Bauhaus, the question arises as to how we want to look at design policies of the 20th centuries from today's perspective and what we can learn from this, what learning experiences and critiques we can derive. This includes a radically transnational perspective, in my view, looking at the Bauhaus not as a national project, but as an international cosmopolitan one with international teaching staff and students. And before and after 1933, it was in contact with other modernities around the world. The radical reform of training of designers picked up on the aspiration of the avant-garde to bring together art and life and put that into practice in tangible terms in a syllabus. In its various phases from 1929 on, the Bauhaus overcame the distinction between applied and fine arts. The Bauhaus quite explicitly moved away from German classicism, antiquity and Renaissance, initially focused on rustic people's art, folk art and non-European crafts, and also looked at the new mass media. There was the notion of the artist's engineer, which didn't demonize mass culture, but sought to work with this. And this attitude was one that responded to the situation of critique of existing education at art academies and schools of arts and crafts in the German-speaking world. They'd historically separated applied and fine arts. That was also the case. Historically, the 18th and 19th century added the salons and the art market. And in many cases, arts and crafts were seen as a national project. And this in no way took the international avant-garde into account. The anti-academic fundamental approach of bringing together the two kinds of arts upturned existing hierarchies of greater and less significant design activities. And that was part of what made up the global interest in the Bauhaus art reforms. And it's also been part and parcel of critiques of high and low. Since then, for example, after the independence of Morocco, we found the notion of the synthesis of arts in teaching as a key part of decolonizing cultural production. This diverse network and its relations of exchange is something we need to grasp. This was triggered by the establishment in 1919 of the new design school. And for this, we need a polyphonic transnational dialogue. That's what we have in the Bauhaus Imaginista project set up in 2016. Now, looking at the centenary now of the Bauhaus, we can see that there are actually efforts to use it as a substitute for looking at other historical anniversaries, just that of the start of the Weimar Republic. Germany continues to have difficulty in recognizing its revolutionary past, unlike other countries, France, Russia, the USA, are countries who year in, year out, celebrate their independence from colonialism. Rather than looking at that revolutionary past, we look at the acquisition of rights, for example, the right for women to vote, which is also a year, 100 years ago. And that is certainly something to be celebrated and was very revolutionary. But there were decades of mobilization before this, and where these efforts were attacked by anti-feminist forces, not just from the right. Thanks to Berlin Activity that started on the 9th of November, and for 100 days, we'll commemorate the November Revolution for 100, with 100 institutions. So I'm using the 19th of January 2019 to set the foundation of the Bauhaus in its societal and cultural political context. In Berlin, we're fortunate enough not just to be commemorating, but also rethinking the Weimar Republic and looking back to the November Revolution. It was indeed a revolution. The monarchy was abolished, and by the 10th of November, in all major German cities, revolutionary Soviet-style councils of workers and soldiers were set up. They represented themselves as representatives of the people, and they were short-lived, but they were highly politically radical, and the coming republic was, as we know, in a sense, constructed out of their bloodshed. Think of all the sailors who were shot down, and think about the building that is to be reconstructed, despite all the controversy in Berlin that's based on, but does not recognize, this sacrifice. I'm thinking of the Berlin Palace. But there seems to be no clear commemoration of these Ems events. Think of Sigmund Freud remembering, repeating, and working through. If there is to be a change in the life of the patient, it's not sufficient just to remember a striking event and to repeat it. So it's not enough just to think about and recall the German Revolution in 1918-1919, or to assert that we're experiencing similar crises today as a repetition. But instead, if we want to act and change something, we must, according to Freud, take steps to work through. And I'd like to thank the organisers of this event, because I think this event is an opportunity for this kind of working through. I'd like to do that by looking at a number of documents that I'm going to compare one with another. For example, there are the 13 points of the Berlin Council of Workers and Soldiers, published in the so-called Rote Fahne on the 5th of November 1918. There's a brochure of the Arbeitsrat für Kunst, the Working Council for Art, on the 1st of March 1919, and the journal Ja, Stimmen des Arbeitsrats für Kunst, Yes, Voices of the Arbeitsrat für Kunst, published by Biene and Gropius in April 1919. You can see the parallels there. Don't forget, there's also the Bauhaus programme and manifesto. And there's also a woodcut by Feininger that we'll see later, which Oskar Schlemmer in 1923 described as a cathedral of socialism. It was called cathedral, but this cathedral of socialism, that form of words, is something that will perhaps be a kind of leitmotif throughout my lecture. So what did the soldiers and workers call for? They wanted all dynasties to be abolished. They wanted the parliament to be abolished. They wanted the state of siege to be overcome, the end of censorship, full press freedom, etc., etc., release of all political prisoners, bank and industry should be expropriated. They also wanted a seven-hour working day. I found that the most surprising. Look at the cultural industry, for example. That's an unattained goal to this day. And next to that, you can see what was supposed to happen outside the town hall, the Berlin Rotes Rathaus. You can see being shaken out there. There's the military being shaken out, the church, and also, of course, the National Socialists. So, moving on now. The next document is a brochure from the Arbeitsrat für Kunst, the Workers' Council for Art. Now, you saw earlier that there were these Soviet-style councils, but here this is actually a working group for art, engaging with art, set up by Bruno Taut in 1918 in conjunction with César Klein, Adolf Bena, and Walter Gropius. From 1919, it was headed by Walter Gropius. It brought together architects and members of the Brücke, or the Bridge Movement, and the Blaue Reiter, the Blue Rider Movement, and the Arbeitsrat für Kunst was very clearly something that involved architects as well. It was dissolved in 1921, but in some of its members joined the November group. Its goals are listed here for those of you who can read it. We saw what the Soviet style councils of workers and soldiers called for. This kind of Soviet is a self-representative body. It's not about solidarity. It's not about solidarity with the workers, but rather about representing artists, representing oneself. That entailed, for example, calling for a reorganization of the municipal administration. There's reference to houses of the people. Think of Tout's idea of the city crown, a place where the people could meet. In some cases, these texts have got rather flowery wording, but there's also the metaphor of finding a particular locus, but a specifically political place where various different arts can come together. There's also criticism of the autonomy of teaching. In other words, the idea is teaching is supposed to be independent. The distinction between fine arts and applied arts should be overcome. And there's a call for exhibitions that are close to and accessible to the people. In a further document, here you can see other interesting points. Parallel, it was published parallel to the Bauhaus Manifesto. Individual artistic works were very much criticized by Gropius, and he criticized the idea of the autonomy of art and indeed also the traditional painting. But the Arbeitsrat for Kunst organized a number of events, the exhibition for unknown architects in Berlin. Friedrich Hayek also went to Weimar and Magdeburg in 1920. There was an exhibition on new building in Berlin in 1920, an exhibition of art for workers in Berlin and Friedrichshain in a corner pub in January 1920. That also included works by children, by workers, but also by Feininger and Chagall. So the idea was through art, through creativity and people's own creativity, to really go to the places where workers were to be found. Friedrichshain, for example, was a center of this movement. Now, what was interesting about all of this, about transgressing these boundaries, was that there was a focus on non-professionals, on amateur artists, were to be viewed as artists, as designers. It wasn't about talent and genius. It was about empowering all. Tout and Gropius picked up on this idea at the time. You can see this in the Bauhaus Manifesto as well. The idea is that this new will to design should be really put into practice. Regina Pranger says that these social relations didn't really exist. There was a kind of dandyism, an expressionist revolutionary dandyism that was a kind of flirtation with the working class. But the Bauhaus Manifesto, and indeed the first curriculum, showed something else. Although in some cases it looked back, for example, to the kind of guilds of specialists that you found in the construction of cathedrals and tried to cast that in a revolutionary vein, but it did something very specific. New fields of activity were opening up. Crafts, it addressed a different kind of artist, a different kind of craftsperson or artisan. It wasn't about training the elite. And there was an awareness, clearly, of a broad-based approach, not a class-based elitist training course. Many of the goals of the Arbeitsrat for Kunst are reflected in the Bauhaus Manifesto. And they also show that this parallel organization called for different forms of expression. There were exhibitions on the one hand, but there was also this new syllabus, integration of the arts into architecture. The right to interpret, though, with architecture being a kind of new leading art form, was reflected in the whole structure. The Arbeitsrat for Kunst was very closely linked to the November group right from the outset. There were artists, filmmakers, musicians. There are currently an exhibition at the Berlinische Galerie, by the way, where you can see works. And that includes designs, architectural designs, that is to say, blueprints for buildings that weren't actually built. But artists such as Molinaj, Kandinsky, and so on were active in the November group, and not to mention Feininger and Klee, and Gropius Mies van der Rohe, Hering, and Tout showed their work in these exhibitions. While the Dada artists, however, turned away from the November group because they found it insufficiently radical, for it didn't call the autonomy of the arts into question, in contrast to other avant-garde organizations. However, the November group, because of its conceptual openness, had a lot more artists involved as members. Dada artist Hannah Hösch was involved in the November group until 1931. In 1924, when Mies van der Rohe took over the chairmanship of the November group, he used it for a series of exhibitions by architects involved in the new building movement and their interest. In 1927, that led to a rift with the fine artists in the November group. They quite rightly felt that they had been sidelined. The architects left as a group in 1927 at a point in time when architecture was to be taught for the very first time at Bauhaus by Hannes Meyer. The depreciation of the works of individual artists by representatives of new building is a paradox. It points to the question of who holds the prerogative interpretation of artistic practice and its societal relevance. The architects of revolutionary years reduced the societal role of art to a component of architecture, and this was part and parcel of their overall notion of the utopia of construction. Justified criticism of the conventional painting as bourgeois entertainment in Gropius's Bauhaus manifesto between a foil to boost the import of new building and the new trope of the architect as an artist of building. The question of what art is and who makes it and where this takes place and whom it represents is a central political question in the revolutionary years 1918 and 1919, a question raised by the avant-garde and, of course, by the Bauhaus. Gropius and Bruno Taut answered this question by imagining that all arts had to be merged into architecture, where they would find their ultimate stage and scope for exhibition. That would lie in the utility of new things, and hence the arts must be subordinate to the architect or must become architects themselves. A trial of strength pulling in all directions, where the actual question of the societal role of the fine and applied arts was unresolved, and indeed it remains unresolved. And that is a question that we have to work through together again today.